Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. It's September 20th, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, joining me every week. Welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Well, good evening, sir.
And coming in here soon will be Catherine Smith. She's having a little technical difficulty, and it's probably the switchboard, not her. I'm going to refresh it, Tim, as we talk, but I tell you what, so I can get my phone away from my face. Had this first GOP debate, and, you know, it was the highest rated program in CNN history, and, you know, this second time they've done this thing. What was your take on it, Tim?
Well, what most people thought, that Lindsey Graham did very well in the first debate that had four people in it, and that Carly Fiorina probably had the edge in the second debate. But with 11 people on the stage, it was kind of tough for some people to even get in a word edgewise. It was almost like some of the more bombastic candidates, for lack of a better word, were almost having their way in to be able to talk, and some people were just lost in the shuffle. Did you notice that Huckabee didn't hardly get a chance to speak? And several of the others. Walker just seemed to be lost in the shuffle there. But it was a good night for Carly Fiorina if you weren't using a fact checker. But, of course, that's another story. Just scoring on debating points, style, how they presented themselves and all that, she was a clear winner. And it is reflected in the brand new CNN org poll, too, by the way.
Yeah, that poll continues to well, there's Catherine right there, and I was trying to call her out. I saw it when she went away. What in the world, Tim? She's there, she's not there. Well, it's getting crazy here. Well, yeah, I saw that new poll said that Donald Trump continues to stay ahead. Said that Scott Walker is dropped down to 1%. You know, a lot of movement there. Tim, I had a question for you about Carly Fiorina. Let's just say somehow she got the nomination, and let's say Hillary Clinton did not get the nomination. What do you think that would do to the gender gap in our politics?
I don't know if it would do much of anything, but just for starters, she's from a state that she's going to lose, you know. And I don't think it would do that much, especially among young single women who are voting in great numbers for Democrats. What I was wondering is, what would it do among, say, white men? How would they view that?
I don't know.
They're a more volatile group, especially with the independents. And I just wonder what they would do.
Well, and also, I don't know that it would move actual numbers of people that do turn out, but it could affect turnout, and that might be something. Well, Catherine, I don't know what happened there with the switchboard, because you texted me, you know, about the time we were going on, so you've been trying, but you're on now, and that's good. Welcome, Catherine.
Yeah, well, I'm on my cell phone instead of on my landline, so I hope it works okay, because it's sometimes...
Maybe it didn't like your landline. I don't know why.
Didn't like my landline. I don't know.
Yeah.
So you're talking about,
well, I don't know,
if Fiorina gets the nomination and Hillary doesn't. Is that where I came?
Yes, each of those. Well, that's if that scenario would have happened, Catherine, what do you think that would do to the gender gap or the turnout, if you will, either one?
I think that would be bad for Republicans. I don't. I think there's a like lot of white, middle-aged and older men who would probably stay home. Well, depending on who the Democratic candidate was.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, either way, an old white guy, you know, the same people you're saying might stay home. They'd have one of their own Democratic side.
Yeah, I just don't think – I don't think it would have much impact on Democrats. I think it would be it would be harder for turnout for Republicans.
Yeah, I don't know. It would definitely change the narrative of, you know, the Democratic Party is the party of diversity to the future, new things. That's why I definitely think some Republicans may be getting more interested in her because to her, and it would be a way to contrast. It's the same thing they did with Sarah Palin, although I will say this, I think there's more there to Carly Fiorina than Sarah Palin.
I don't know.
That's more the knock on Sarah Palin than it is credit to Carly Fiorina, I will be honest. What do you think, Catherine?
I don't know. I think from her performance the other night at the all of them at the debate the other night, they're all a bunch of idiots. I'm sorry. I obviously Sarah Palin was a failed candidate, and she has faced a lot of criticism, and well found. But I got to say that that debate the other night was really disappointing. And I'm not just talking about the Planned Parenthood stuff because, you know, I tend to focus on that. But all across the board, they just were pandering, and I was very pretty much disgusted by the whole thing. And while Carly Fiorina was very poised and she did, you know, hold herself together well, what came out of her mouth was ridiculous. So, you know, okay, fine. She presented well, but what she talked about was ludicrous. You know, what's worse? You know, looking like a fool and talking like a fool, or looking smart and talking like a fool? I don't know.
Yeah, well, anyway. And speaking of the debate, now, afterward, Donald Trump said he felt bad for all the rest of the candidates because everything was focused on him, and they didn't get that much time. Tim, do you think Donald Trump was being sincere when he made that comment?
If Donald Trump is talking about how wonderful Donald Trump is, he really believes that. You know, that's just the way he's wired. But, you know, he's going to get a lot of the focus. He's the front runner, and by a considerable bit at the moment, the latest poll I'm sitting here looking at has him up 9 points over the closest person to the rest of the field. He's running a solid 25%. He's Donald Trump. He's one of the most well-known people, especially his face and his hair, in the world. And, of course, he's going to be the focus of the thing, standing right in the center of the stage, having the audacity to run for president, clearly having a great time doing it, and playing his part as an entertainer to the hilt. And he's the one that's driving all this viewing audience. I mean, in two debates now, there's been 47 million viewers. And that's because of Donald Trump, I think. I don't think it's because of Scott Walker or Dr. Carson or Rand Paul. It's Donald Trump. Of course he's going to get a lion's share of the notice. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously, you know, getting so much attention for whatever reason. You know, you'd think when he kind of lost his apprentice gig that he might get less attention. But since then, it's gone up, if you will, obviously on the more of the political frame. Well, let's stay with Donald Trump on something else. Now, he made another comment about Marco Rubio, and he said, you know, Marco Rubio, I've never seen somebody sweat so much. And he's done other things. You know, he's talked about Carly Farina's appearance. And my question to you, and I'll start with Catherine, do you think Donald Trump's a bully?
Oh, absolutely. But Marco Rubio was sweating. Like, I didn't watch it until the next day, but I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie Broadcast News, but there's a great scene in that movie where the guy just goes into a flop sweat. He's one chance to be on to be a anchor on the news, and he just can't stop sweating. And that's what I kept thinking about when I saw Marco Rubio when I was watching that debate. I mean, he just couldn't stop sweating. It was hot,
and it may have been obvious.
He was sweating more than everybody else.
But
yeah,
is that something Donald Trump as another candidate should have been the one to point out, or do you just leave that
to the
pundit? Is that obvious?
Donald Trump. I don't know if he's a bully as much. He's just a blowhard. You know, he cannot stop himself from saying whatever comes to his mind. You know, he is unable to you know, control his mouth. He seems to be.
No
filter. But yeah, I think he's a bully. You know, he talks above everybody and criticizes people about their appearance and about their, you know, I would say he's a bully.
Yeah, I mean, and Tim, follow up on that. If he is a bully, is that presidential?
Well, no, being a bully probably is the presidential. Trying to project yourself as a tough guy like Bush 43 did, which I always thought was laughable, it is, you know, what a lot of them think of as presidential, but playing his part, guys. He's used to getting his own way. He's used to being the focus of any crowd. He's used to doing that on television. You noticed during the foreign policy part of the debate, he pretty much quietened down, him and Dr. Carson, naturally. He just quietened down because it's not something he's comfortable with talking about. This other stuff, this garbage he's talking, that's something he's talking about, comfortable talking about. Attacking the others personally, the way they look, the way they dress, the way they sweat, blah, 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 belittling them. You know, on The Apprentice, you're fired, you know. That's what Donald Trump is used to doing. So he's doing exactly what he's accustomed to doing. It's almost like he's winning because he doesn't care if he wins, and he's breaking every rule out there to do it. It's amazing to watch, really, but it's got its ceiling, and I think for him its ceiling is about a fourth of the GOP primary voters, and I don't think he can raise that up as a result because he doesn't really look presidential at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to be kind of shattering those ceilings every time, and we think, oh, it's maybe 15%, then he gets to 20, and he's gotten up to, you know, I think he's gotten up to
He's dropped off. He was, this poll here, David, this CNN poll, the last time they did it, he was at 32%. Now he's at 24. But he seems to settle in the 23 to 25. That's about his average and has been for an awfully long time. And I just don't see that growing. I don't see it.
Tim, I agree with you, but who does look presidential up there?
Well, the best-looking one of them is either Kasich or Bush. Those are the establishment people. Those two would be their best candidates. I out of all that bunch of 16. Now that Rick Perry's gone. I still got to drop back on Governor Kasich or Governor Bush. I just think those two are, you know, if you're going to run a guy for president, they're not the most exciting guys in the world. Of course, neither was Mitt Romney, but, you know, but at least their policy walks. They've got a decent record to run on. They're from big states that the Republicans desperately need to win. So and especially Bush can just raise all kind of money. So I'm not seeing as much of a downside with those two guys as I would some of the others. What about it, David? Okay. Who's you got?
I think really almost any of them are more presidential in the sense they're not a bully, they're not an attention hog, those kind of things. I think, you know, you name 15 or 16 of them, even some of the other debates that have more of that traditional politician feel now, of course, or at least a professional feel. But, of course, I think that's what some of the people that like Trump don't want. They don't want that traditional politician. They like that, you know, tell it like it is, even if you're rude.
Yeah.
Talking about The Apprentice.
But
one thing I will say there, when he carries on The Apprentice, that's the format of the show. Although I will say, to his discredit, his kids, who he always promotes with him, his daughter and one of his two sons, they always seem like they have far more tact than their father when they're criticizing. I mean, they're criticizing in a way like more of a job analysis, and he can just be very crass as he does it. Oh, and finally, something came out in the past week or so. Arnold Schwarzenegger, another Republican politician, is replacing Donald Trump. I kind of thought they put the show on mothballs for a little while and then pull it out. That might actually help the ratings if they, you know, put it on ice for 3 years or something. But they're going to go ahead and go with it with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Are they just trying to alienate Democrats, Catherine?
Well, you know, it was supposed to be Martha Stewart. Like, a couple years ago when he wanted to step away, it was like, I saw an interview with her where it was like they were ready to sign the contract, and he decided he didn't want to give it up. So
yeah. So maybe he had to endorse the person, if you will, possibly.
Oh, no,
it was all
good to go, and then he changed his mind. Like, I mean,
they
were moments away from signing. It wasn't. And Trump was on the, he was in favor of it. It's just that he decided he didn't want to drop out.
Oh, yeah, but now, I'm talking about now with Schwarzenegger, I guess, did he have to sign off? Because I don't know if he's got any kind of producer credit or, you know, he's tied into it some way where he, you know, he.
Yeah, well,
you know,
I don't think he is now.
Kiss the ring.
They fired
yeah.
him, so.
Yeah,
Did they fire him or did he just pushed him out? It was definitely they pushed him out.
Once they started making the comments about Hispanic Americans, that's when he got pushed out. That was the initial push out, if you will. Well, hey, it's 7:20, everybody, and it's time for our guest. Join us again from the state of Kentucky, renowned political consultant and party leader up in Kentucky, Matt White. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, good to be on.
Oh, good to have you on again. Well, Kentucky is just a really hotbed state. I mean, y'all are one of 50 states, but y'all have more than one of 50th of the political action these days, with a governor's race, like two in the country. And, of course, you got a folk hero to some and a pariah to others in your state. You're going to have a U.S. Senate race down the road. You got one of the presidential. I've just laid it all out. Now we've got to start somewhere, Matt. And why don't we go ahead and start with the governor's race and just give us a synopsis of how that's going.
Well, we're pretty much ground zero for crazy at this moment in Kentucky. I mean, we really are. I mean, Mark Twain, I think, said that at the end of the world, he'd like to come to Kentucky because we're 20 years behind. And that sometimes seems like where we're at right now in politics. But, yeah, we've got a lot going on. And the governor's race gets the least amount of attention. In all my life, I've not seen a governor's race that has been less inspirational, let's put it that way. It's really bizarre. We have an open seat. Jack Conway, who's our Democratic nominee, who's our current attorney general, he's from the beginning of this campaign, he did not have a primary fight. So he had plenty of time, of lead-up time, to really define his opponent and define himself. And I think we squandered some opportunities with that. And right now we're looking at, with the Kim Davis issue, we're looking at the Republican base being far more energized in some ways than the Democratic base on social issues. If this race is decided on social issues, we lose. If it's decided on economic issues and economic expansion that we've had under the Bashir administration, then we can win. So it has a really strange, unsettling feeling right now.
Well, I want to ask one more question before I pass this thing around. What's your gut feeling on what the average Kentucky voter is going to cast their ballot on?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, because I think right now, I think before the Kim Davis episode and the gay marriage ruling in the Supreme Court, you know, the race was really going to come down to whether or not you trusted Matt Bevin, somebody who was an outsider, who's not lived in the state very long, who's had very questionable business dealings, who Mitch McConnell, when he ran against him in the primary last year, pretty much took him apart limb by limb on that issue of trust, because there's so much out there that you would question a guy on. However, it seems right now, from talking to voters and just my gut feeling, that none of that really matters all that much to a lot of voters. A lot of voters are focused on this issue of with Kim Davis, are just mad at Washington, maybe want to change. And I think that that's all fine and good when you've got the opposite side who's only had a governorship one term in 40 years. But our side has to be able to rally the troops and have something to run on. And I think that's where the Conway campaign has not done a good job.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over. I keep asking questions, but I need to be fair to my co-host. Tim, questions for Matt on the governor's race.
Good evening, Matt, and thank you for being on with us tonight. This football-themed ad that Matt Bevin's campaign is running, it's his first statewide ad. Why has he waited so long to get on statewide television?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think all of us have looked at that with curiosity. Somebody could write his own check. I know that he has had a really hard time raising any amount of money with the political establishment and the Republican Party in Kentucky, so he's going to have to self-fund most of this. He really hasn't had any help at all with Mitch McConnell, and the regular Republican donors have not had a lot of trust in him. So he's probably, you know, the wind is that the Republicans are back here in Kentucky from the start. And if you hold your resources to the end, you wait to see the white in their eyes and you fire. I think that's been his strategy all along. And I think it might end up being a pretty good strategy. The football ad's a good ad. I think, you know, your whole idea of, you know, putting Conway on Team Obama and Matt Bevin on Team Kentucky is not a bad strategy. It's pretty much a no-brainer. And it's a creative enough ad to where it's memorable. And but and I've seen a couple of Bevin ads over the last week, sponsored by some outside groups that have been decent. But you know, people aren't really focused on this race at all. So the fact that Conway was up on air really heavily back in June and part of July to move his poll numbers before the first Bluegrass poll came out, and it worked, but nobody's paying attention to this race. But I think one of our biggest problems on our side was the fact that we did not have a contested primary. The Republicans did have a contested primary that was exciting. So the fact that Bevin has kept his resources to the end, I think is actually a pretty decent strategy for him, because the wind was always going to be at his back in this race.
Uh-huh. And now, I was looking today at the Real Clear Politics average of polls for your governor's race there, and they're showing close to 18% of the votes still undecided. That seems to be awfully high for this point in the race. What's your take on that many undecideds, if indeed that's true?
Yeah, I think that is not I think it is unusual for an open race like this, but I think part of people's and I think what you really dig down deeper into some of those crosstabs and some of those numbers, you'd find that a lot of those are conservative Democrats. So we have about 30%, 40% of Kentuckians that are Democrats here but vote Republican on federal races, who could vote for Republican for gubernatorial race, but often don't. But they don't really like Jack Conway, but they're not sold on Matt Bevin yet because of the race that was run last year. And because McConnell had done such a good job taking him apart, there are still doubts about Bevin. But Bevin, truly just has to close the deal. He doesn't have to make a huge. The sense on the ground is he really doesn't have to make a huge sell job in this race. He just has to close it, be acceptable, because a lot of people have decided that Jack Conway's not. I'm talking about Democrats out in the state, that he's not the most exciting candidate to get behind because of what happened in 2010. And, you know, Jack has had the harder job. He's had to sell himself and disqualify Bevin. And that's always a harder thing to do in a campaign. So the fact that there's 18% undecided, I think it's only because Bevin is such an unknown, factor to a lot of voters. But as we get closer, we'll see. People will see.
Oh, all right. And with that, I'm going to swing it over to Catherine. Catherine?
Hey, thanks for being on the show tonight. We really appreciate it. It's nice to hear from you and to hear about Kentucky. I'm kind of surprised that Bevin isn't getting – I mean, I understand that McConnell tried to take him out, but now that he's the candidate for governor, he's still not getting support from, like, the Republican the traditional Republicans. Is that what I understand? It is.
And it is a little surprising to me, considering that they really have a shot at winning this race in November. I mean, it's hard to imagine Matt Bevin becoming our next governor, to be honest with you, but it's really looking more and more likely that the odds might be slightly in his favor. So it's hard for me to believe that people are not jumping on board his campaign, but I think it has all to do with Matt Bevin and the fact that he's been sort of an isolating figure, you know, not someone who's been known to pick up the phone and call Republican legislators or county judge executives and really doing the political blocking and tackling that you need to do after you win a primary. He really hasn't done that. And plus, everyone knows that, you know, he ran against Mitch McConnell in the primary. If you do that in Kentucky, you know, it's like the equivalent of, you know, getting a fish wrapped up sent to your door. You know, it's just not a cool thing to do among your problems.
Right. So what's his I apologize. I didn't do all my homework tonight. Is he like a traditional Republican, a Tea Party, or what's his?
Yeah, he's a Tea Party Republican. He's a Tea Party Republican, and at least that's the shtick that he came to Kentucky and ran on.
So what does that mean if he does get elected without the support of the traditional Republicans? So what does that mean when he you know gets into the governor's office? Does he have a little more freedom to be to not be beholden to them? I mean, is that could that be an intentional?
Oh, I think he absolutely does have a lot more freedom. I mean, here's a guy who. Rand Paul came out and campaigned with him right after the primary, and standing up in front of reporters, he would not answer the question whether or not he supports Rand Paul for president. I mean, you know, he's a very peculiar political figure, in my opinion, and I think he would have a lot more freedom. He will not have, you know, his running mate, for instance, who's African-American from Detroit, has a great personal story. But again, just completely outside the political mainstream of Republicans in Kentucky, and I think he would have to form a cabinet. He would have, you know, we're one of the governorships that the governors, you know, unlike Texas and some other governorships, where there isn't an incredible amount of power. We have an incredible amount of power in our governors, and you know, the boards and commissions that they appoint, and you'd have to put together an administration immediately and submit a budget within a month and a half of taking office. I mean, there's a lot that would have to be done immediately upon taking office. And I think that that's, to me, very concerning if I was a Republican and what kind of fiasco
I mean, the way politics usually works, you would think that there would be people, you know, maybe he's not so good at making calls, but you'd think people would be sort of maybe not clamoring, but at least making an effort to sidle up to him so that
I think people have reached out to him. I think that his problem is that he's a little bit of a jerk and truly,
shocker.
This is what I've heard from Republicans, that he's a jerk to them. And does not want a lot of help. And it's hard to help somebody who doesn't really want help and who could write their own check. He can write his own check, you know. And so the way the political winds are blowing right now in Kentucky, he really honestly doesn't need a lot of their support. And I will say this, and I said this all along, and I read Mitch McConnell say it the other day, the exact same thing the other day. There are a lot of Republicans who believe that, you know, they're within 6 votes of taking over the state House of Representatives in Kentucky, which would mean they would probably hold for a very, very long time. We've been the last southern state to hold out on that. And if Matt Bevin is elected, there's a good chance that we'll hold that House and be a good chance that we'll be able to run against him and some of the problems that he'd have in the administration. If Conway wins, I think there's a good chance that we might lose the House. Even though we'd have the power of the governorship and money, I think that it'd be easy to run against him as well. And so there's some calculus going on the Republican side. Hey, we have a chance to take back the House. I think we'd have a better shot at doing it without Matt Bevin in the governor's chair. So let's do that one first. Let's take that, give Conway 4 years. We'll try to beat him 4 years from now because we think he's weak. That's what I think a lot of people are thinking. I don't necessarily think that's 100% true. I'd rather have the governorship. I mean, I'd rather us win and have that than waiting on Matt Bevin to screw up. But that's what a lot of Republicans are thinking. They just don't like the guy. But at the same time, if he wins, he doesn't owe them very much.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to pass it back to David. Thanks a lot. That was very interesting.
Yes, well, that governor's race, we'll definitely be watching the next. I guess it's got just a little over a month till it, votes are cast, if you will, or actually early voting probably starting any time now. Well, been making a lot of news. That's probably happened a lot in Lexington and Louisville and other places, but either further east in the state, been a lot more news on a very local level. I mean, a show like this, we normally wouldn't talk about your clerk of courts. Not that they're not important, but they just really don't make good fodder for political talk shows. But this is the exception, Kim Davis. Now, obviously, we can take a national view on how people are perceiving this thing. But inside of Kentucky, what's your read, Matt?
I know that there are churches across Kentucky who are beating this drum. You know, we need to stand up for our religious freedoms. And that's been going on since this has started. It's concerning for me, who's on the opposite end politically of this, because, again, when you have such a low interest in a race like this, a couple of points one way or the other could decide this race. And this is the kind of issue that resonates with people who care about this issue. And it doesn't help that Jack Conway, our Democratic nominee, sort of let this case go, and it went all the way to Supreme Court, and he didn't challenge it. I mean, it doesn't help with the in tapping down the fervor. So, I people aren't necessarily talking about it every day like they did, and even the people that are upset with gay marriage were not necessarily saying that she should do what she did, but because most people are common sense enough to know you should follow the law, even if you disagree with it. But it is a rallying cry for them. It is something to motivate them. And some of these voters who normally would not vote in an off-year gubernatorial election. So I look at it as a real plus for them. And even among, you know, really strong Democrats out in these rural counties that would normally vote for us in some of these races, I think that they're angry. So it's not, you know, Matt Bevin in the debate the other night said this is a great positive thing for Kentucky. I think a lot of people think that this is a real embarrassment for Kentucky. And some of those people are not just Democrats. So I think with evangelicals, this is something that's a rallying cry, that someone of their like is persecuted, that their First Amendment rights, this is how they're couching it, their First Amendment rights are being overridden, and that
it's just indicative of a government out of control who's putting their boot on the necks of religious people here in Kentucky. So, nationally, it's a joke. I think here in Kentucky, it's a lot less than a joke. It's either you're really, like me, humiliated and embarrassed by it and fearful that it's going to be a huge turnout thing that's going to be used against us, or it's just one more thing that the Obama administration and the liberals are forcing upon us.
Well, I want to ask a follow-up before I pass it to Catherine and Tim on this, and that is one of the most curious things about this whole deal. She's a Democrat, and her defenders have been Republicans. Now, I know she's a U.S. Senate candidate, congressional representative, something like that, but she does have a D beside her name. How is that being viewed inside Kentucky with the political races going on between D's and R's?
Yeah, you all are all in the South. I mean, you kind of know how some of these Southern Democrats are. And in Kentucky, it's very much this way. I mean, I think in Georgia or South Carolina, some of those other places that you all come from, a lot of those people have already switched. Here in Kentucky, you know, county races are really big deals, and we have a lot of counties. So someone that is a registered Democrat running a Democratic primary, it totally makes sense to do that, even if you're a Republican in every other way. So I think outsiders kind of wouldn't understand that. Nobody here bats an eye. Nobody. That's totally not an issue that she's a Democrat, because it makes sense, because we have so many Democratic elected officials who have this type of point of view that people kind of understand it. So if you want to be elected in a lot of these counties, you got to be registered. You got to run as a Democrat, even though you're, you know, known Republican. It's ridiculous, but that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more so that way, say, 10 years ago. It seems like now, in at least the part of the state I'm in, that pretty much folks that are like, you know, marriage equality is a big issue for them and they're against it, they're pretty much, so they've switched. So that she seems like she's a little behind the curve for some other states. But that may just be the nature of Eastern Kentucky.
It's the nature of it. And here, I mean, she's from Eastern Kentucky. She's from the Moorhead area. I mean, a lot of them are registered Democrats. And again, I think we are behind in that sort of switch. I mean, it's not just her. It's the voters that haven't switched their parties, but they're in every other way Republican. And they're only Democrat to vote in Democratic primary. So that's still very much alive and well here in Kentucky. That hasn't changed. And it's one of the reasons why we're the last southern state to switch the House of Representatives. Our state house is remain Democrat, and we're the last one. It's because we still have that in our culture.
Yeah, so I'm going to pass this to Catherine, then to Tim on anything on Kim Davis.
I'm just so puzzled by this. So, I mean, there's a lot of analogies that have been made, you know, like if, you know, there's about a ton of them. They're all over the internet. But nobody, so there doesn't seem to be a concern about someone who's been elected who isn't doing their job, like that isn't part of the
I think people look at, yeah, I mean, among me and some of my friends, but, you know, honestly, even among neighbors that aren't necessarily political, but we talk about politics, it's not so much that, because I think they can intellectually understand that, yes, you should do your job if you're an elected official, even if you disagree with it religiously. It is that at least someone is standing up and is sacrificing themselves for what they believe in is the right thing to do. And that's why she has gotten law street cred out in Kentucky among some voters, that she's willing to go to jail, that she's willing to do something that they wouldn't necessarily be willing to do, or other county clerks. We have 120 counties here. I think it was like 60 or 70 county clerks who signed a letter when the ruling first came down and gave it to the governor saying that they don't want to do this. So majority of our county clerks had this opinion. She's the only one that actually, well, there are two other ones, but nobody has gone to their courthouses and really challenged it. But she's the only one that has paid the price of going to jail for it. And I think that is a huge rallying cry. You know, it sort of fits in the whole persecution type thing that they kind of focus on. So it was a pretty powerful image for those people that care about that issue, is for her to pay that price. It's hard. I mean, I don't agree with any of it at all. I think it's horrible and embarrassing, but now it is a fact that her going to jail for standing up for her religious beliefs is a true rallying cry for people here.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and pass it to Tim because I can't really wrap my head around it.
I have the same problem, Catherine, wrapping my head around it. So I just try to, I guess, stay with the political part of it. Thus, the next question. I know that Governor Huckabee went running up there immediately to have himself a rally. And
Ted Cruz.
Senator Cruz was not far behind. So how do you suppose this would affect the state of the Republican primary race in Kentucky next year? Will she be a factor in it? Will they be seeking to have their pictures taken with her? Will she be a Joe the Plumber type cult hero? What will be the deal?
That's assuming that there is a real contested presidential primary when it gets to May, and that hasn't been decided yet. So,
mm-hmm.
But absolutely, if we have this campaign rolling into May or toward the summer, yes, you will see all of them try to get her support. Yes, absolutely. But I have a feeling that we won't have a real contested primary on the Republican side going into May. We never really do. Yeah.
You do have Dr. Paul, of course. How will, and he's you know, a libertarian. Everyone knows that. How will he handle this?
Well, you know, I mean, he's made some comments, you know, on Fox News where he pretty much is a guest host on that network. He's made some comments in support of her and his neck getting over here and getting his picture taken and making a big to-do about it. So to his credit, he could have been the U.S. Senator from Kentucky, been up there and knocked Huckabee off the stage, and he absolutely did not partake in that. So, you know, he's got so many problems going on right now on his campaign that it's a little baffling. So
yeah, really. And with that lead in, I'm going to throw it back to David because I bet Dr. Paul is the next place he's going, right, David?
Yes, well, first I tell you, Tim, I almost feel bad for Kim Davis. You compared her to Joe the Plumber. What an insult! That is.
You know what
that,
I
want?
I love
it. I don't understand. Yeah, I don't understand. Like 14 minutes and 59 seconds of his fame. Well, let's get back to Rand Paul. Rand Paul's presidential race. I don't think it's going quite as he had hoped, Matt. What are people in the state saying about it? And of course that segues into the fact that he paid all that money to make sure he could run for both offices, and it seems kind of futile to worry about the presidential primary.
It does. It's not going at all as planned. And you know, the caucus idea really ticked off a lot of Republicans, not just the cost of it and the fact that they have not had one here in the caucuses, and I've worked them before. They're a completely different animal. But just kind of the arrogance of it actually really angers a lot of people. Rand Paul's campaign for president, you know, at one point he looked like the little edgy candidate that could get attention. But when you got the likes of Donald Trump and and Ted Cruz and some of these other people that are actually just a little bit crazier than Rand Paul and better at getting attention. It just kind of makes him look normal. In fact, at the debate the other night on CNN, which I thought was a horrible debate, partly from CNN's handling of the debate and questioning, Rand Paul actually had some answers that, gosh, seemed pretty normal compared to the others. So I think he is suffering from not being crazy enough right now.
Who would have ever thought that would happen?
Exactly. That he would actually be the normal guy in the room.
Yeah. It's just that he's, you know, I think somebody talked about that Time magazine cover where he was the most interesting man in politics. Well, interesting doesn't quite get to the poll numbers it once did, then, if that's the case. Well, let me go ahead and pass it again to Catherine, then Tim, on Rand Paul, the presidential, the Senate part of it, just anything they want to cover. Catherine?
Well, you know, I have to ask about this fight.
Uh-huh.
Right. Y'all heard about this fight, right? Where Marco Rubio's staffer punched Rand Paul's staffer in Mackinac Island, which is like,
yeah.
Y'all probably don't know about Mackinac Island. I'm from Michigan, so I know about Mackinac Island.
Yeah, I know they're like, having a big
it's very refined. It's a very, like, refined, you know, there's no cars. It's very traditional, very, you know, not she-she. It's just very traditional.
Let me interpret.
Hilarious.
Let me interpret. That Michigan refined, that means they cut off their blue jeans using a ruler.
No, it's fancy. Mackinac Island is fancy. I mean, fancy it's an island. It's a summer resort kind of place. But anyway, so apparently Marco Rubio's staffer tried to beat up Rand Paul's staffer. So, like, have you read about this? Like,
no, I really haven't. But I will say this. I mean, Rand Paul's staffers are unusual. I mean, of course, you've got, you know, Jesse Benton indicted. You've got all kinds of stories and problems that have come out of the Paul operation. So his, I mean, they sort of fancy themselves as kind of little political MacGyvers or something. It's a very odd operation that they have. And I think that a lot of the people that they've attracted are not necessarily people that have been in traditional campaigns. And so honestly, that doesn't surprise me that maybe there's a fight that developed between a Paul staffer and someone else.
Well, apparently what happened was the Rubio guy was shopping for votes for the straw poll, and he apparently – I don't know, but he clocked the guy. I mean, we're not talking like little...
The ball person hit the Rubio
right,
person.
I mean, it was a literal punch, like the guy got punched. So I just think it's... I don't know what it says about Marco Rubio's people or what it... And I don't know who actually, like, who they say won. I don't know if the other guy clocked him back and then he won. I don't know, but... But I think it's always fun to fisticuff. I mean... I've been thinking all along that's how we should do it. Like if we're gonna act like we're Idiocracy 2, we might as well go for it and have a, you know.
Well, the Republicans in their debate the other night, they're just appealing to the lowest common denominator. So why not just have a mud wrestling, you know,
right,
thing
exactly.
going on? I mean,
they
can't get any lower in human nature than what they're appealing to. So.
Yeah, I mean that. That debate the other night really it was like, okay, this is an audition for Idiocracy too. I mean, it really struck me that way. But
it was,
CNN's
fault. It's CNN's fault, in my opinion. I mean, it's as bad as the answers were that the candidates had. The CNN set this up is truly just going after Donald Trump and picking fights, you know, setting up fights with each person and doing these split screens. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
I'm going to pass it to Tim now, because he probably has a question of substance.
Actually, that was a pretty good question, Catherine, but, you know, that's just me. I'm sitting here looking at the brand-new CNN org poll, Matt, and Dr. Paul is in eighth place at 4%. I mean, it's pretty obvious his presidential campaign is not going to succeed. At what point does he have to cut the umbilical cord before it really, really starts creating problems for his reelection to the Senate? At what point do the Democrats look at him and say, wait a minute, maybe we can get this guy after all?
Well, first of all, in the CNN poll or any of the national polls, they're interesting but a little bit irrelevant, because Rand Paul is always going to do well, better than advertised in New Hampshire, in my opinion. And I've worked in New Hampshire primaries. I know the voters there. I think he fits well in that environment. And I know he's not polling well in New Hampshire right now like he used to. But I think at the end of the day, that's where he's really going to hang his hat. And, you know, I wouldn't advise him to get out right now. I wouldn't advise most of them to get out right now. Because, except for Scott Walker, because he came in with such high expectations and leading in Iowa, and now he's absolutely basement. That's the only candidate that I would say you really probably, you know, there's nowhere to go. Rand Paul, I think there's still plenty of room for him. I think there are states that he could do well in. His problem is the indictment issues and the fact that big donors are not going to give him money because some of this stuff is just sticking to him, and it's just too questionable. That's his problem. It really isn't so much his message. It's the fact that he has very little funds left, and him scraping together the $250,000 last week is, you know, kind of, you know, was tough for him in their operation. They didn't plan on it being tough, but they're not hitting any of their fundraising numbers at all. That's much more disconcerting than the fact that he's 4% in the polls right now, to me. As far as the time limit for him to get out and pull the trigger and run for re-election, I think he still has plenty of time for that. I think I hear a lot of national pundits talk about that. We do have one possible candidate that is a really good candidate, Adam Edlin, who's our state auditor. He's up for re-election. He's one of these candidates that he's extremely talented, personable, one-on-one, great speaker, smart. He'd be going against somebody who's run a presidential campaign, who beat Jack Conway by double digits 6 years earlier. We're never going to be favored in that race, regardless of what happens on the presidential. We're just not. And I really question, I know people from the outside question about how if Paul does poorly, really ding him in Kentucky? I don't necessarily think so at all. I think Paul still has a little Teflon to him here with Kentucky voters on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I just think that it's going to be hard to really beat him in a U.S. Senate race. We have not won a U.S. Senate race in Kentucky since 1992, when Wendell Ford won re-election and Clinton won in Kentucky as well that year. So I would not bet against Rand Paul in re-election. I think Adam Edlin would make it a great race. I think it would be interesting. I think it would be substantive. I think we could, you know, I think it would be a lot better even in the race last year. I think the results would be a lot closer, but I think it would be a better race because the candidate would make it a lot better and interesting.
That's an excellent assessment. Thank you for that. Let me throw it back to David now.
What would make it interesting if Kim Davis ran as a Democrat against Rand Paul, the Republican.
please.
Turn everything on their head.
That would be a really good Machiavellian move, actually.
I don't know what would happen there. But then, of course, then you'd have a lot of Democrats who thought they really didn't have a candidate, and that would change some things up, too. So who knows? But I say that in jest. Matt, we appreciate you being on and covering all these topics with us, and we'll be watching Kentucky and pretty much probably having to talk about it almost on a weekly basis until this governor's race happens, and we may have to have you on before it happens or certainly do a post-mortem after it. So we'll have you on sooner than later if it's okay with you.
It's fine with me. Love talking politics, especially Kentucky politics, and I think this race is going to be very interesting to watch on election night.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, folks, we've got, I'd say, about just under five minutes left. And Catherine, I'm going to let you pick. Handwriting analysis or a possible Georgia U.S. Senate candidate. We got time for one more. You pick.
Oh, I like this handwriting analysis story.
Okay, well, and we'll have to get on to the U.S. Senate candidate because next week we may still have that one maybe fresh. Well, they did a little handwriting analysis, and my take on it is some of these figures were so famous that I don't see how you'd find a handwriting analysis that wasn't familiar with Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump to form an opinion without being biased because it was their signature. It's not like you could take some anonymous handwriting. But then some of the ones I guess I could put a little more stock in were, say, a Bobby Jindal that somebody might not be aware of. I thought his was very bizarre in the way it was. It almost like a butterfly that was separated. The Bobby and the Jindal were so far apart. They were all angled out. It was, and you couldn't read any of it. It was really funky. So I thought, and they talked about he was, you know, it was really negative connotation based on this interesting handwriting. But I don't know how much I put into this. I mean, maybe more than numerology, more than tarot cards, but obviously I wouldn't call it a science, if you will. Catherine, since you picked it, you get the next stab at it.
Well, I just think it's – I just always find it interesting to look at something as simple as handwriting and see what someone's handwriting or whatever it might be conveys about them. And I mean, you're right. You know, they're all famous people and their signatures are, you know, recognizable. I mean, all of them really, I mean, even Bobby Jindal. But I did find the examples really, like you said, Bobby Jindal's was kind of like kooky, like really widely separated. And I thought that the analysis was interesting. Like, I thought that what they said about Carly Fiorina, determined, that she's determined, and she is intelligent and an intelligent and creative thinker based on her, but also formal, likes things to be clean and organized. So I thought, and when you look at her signature, you can say, yeah, I kind of can get that from that signature. So I just thought it was interesting. I think it's just another, you know, it's not going to change anybody's minds probably. It's just another little bit of information to fill out the candidates. So I thought it was interesting.
Well, Tim, I'm going to do a quick handwriting analysis before I throw it to you. And I've seen this in many years of teaching school. Girls have better handwriting than boys. Both the ladies' handwriting, Hillary Clinton and Carly Fiorina, was much more legible than the men. Go, Tim.
Yeah, well, everybody in the free world has better handwriting than me, so, you know. but some of these things are so obvious. Like they said, well, this shows that Chris Christie has a deep interest in baseball. Hey, I already knew Chris Christie liked baseball. Anyone who follows politics at all knows that he likes baseball. So it looks like this handwriting expert just, I don't know, repeated the obvious. Ted Cruz likes math. Well, being that he went to Harvard, I certainly hope that he did because he wouldn't have been at Harvard otherwise. I mean, you know, come on. Hillary Clinton thinks with her head instead of her heart. I mean, just like everyone not already know that. Now, the one that interested me, you've already alluded to, Jindal. And they made the statement, his handwriting looks like he's starting to, you know, come apart, like his campaign is coming off the rails, his political career is coming apart. But I got to wonder, on the first election night that he was elected governor of Louisiana, didn't his handwriting also look like that, or has it changed? That's something they didn't mention, did they?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, this is pretty flimsy. I guess Jim Gilmore's handwriting analysis with a blank sheet of paper, non-existent like the campaign. I mean, you know, it just for what it was worth. Well, I'm glad to have Matt Wine on the show. Great show tonight. I hope we can come on in again in the future and talk about Kentucky. But until then, been the Cozy Vine.
Good night, guys.
Good night.